Hi, Mr. Goldenberg.
Hi, how are you?
I am thrilled to be speaking with you. I have admired your work for so many years, going back to early in your career, Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love that movie.
It is still one of my favorites. And a
I was
lot.
nosedive when I did that movie.
But you never cease to dazzle me with your work as a storyteller, with the editing. Transformers, the latest one that came out earlier this year, again, high energy, brilliant. But
Thank you.
what you do here with Air, oh my God, Billy, this is fast, it's brilliant, fast paced. It's shot, you've got this. Richardson shot it, you cut it. It has the feel of a basketball game. It's energized, it's back and forth, passing the ball between the Nike players. Midpoint, it kind of slows down a little, equates to almost a halftime, and then it picks up again for the second half when Aflac just comes in and swoops, shoots, and scores big time. Your work is
That's
rapier.
well put.
It's crisp, sharp, fast. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous. And then you make the most of the 360s that Richardson gives you, especially the scene with Dolores Jordan and the camera spins in the bullpen with a blur from Sonny's POV, but then stops on Sonny as reality is hitting him as to what's happening. That is cut so well. I have been in awe since I saw the film in March.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. I mean, it just makes me so happy when people like this film because it's one of my favorites, and it was such a joy to work on a film that people at the end of the screenings were happier than when they came in, you know.
Oh
And
yeah.
to have a part and to play a small part in that was really, really fun. You know, everybody had a smile on their face. People laughed during the movie, and you know, and I think it has meaning, you know, on top of it. So. It really is. I haven't done that many films like this. You know, I tend to do a lot of darker material for whatever reason. So it was a real joy to do this one.
Just absolutely thrilling.
Well, thank you. I mean, they gave me so much wonderful material, you know, and then so many little details in the production design and the costume design and the hair, you know. And you know, and they, so many great little pieces of, you know, inserts of the little details, and it gave me the ability to add so much sort of richness to the film, and you know, and it's like in a way like a trip down memory lane for a lot of us who you know were alive then, but at the same time, I think everything was all story driven, so you were able to accomplish moving the story forward and still having all those little details, so. It was it's when you have that kind of material, you can really do something, you know. You're not just taking something and just trying to make it work. You have all this rich material, you can really try and make something wonderful.
You know, I'm really curious because an interesting thing with this film is you have us on the edge of our seats, even though we know the outcome. We know what happens in this story at the end. How challenging is that for you as an editor to build that tension and keep us on the edge of our seats, white knuckling as to what's going to happen? Is Dolores ever going to smile? Is she going to make a deal? Will Sonny Vaccaro, will he get out of dad mode? I'm curious how you approach that to maintain that level of tension.
Well, you know, I've done several. I mean, the Argo is that way too. I
Yeah.
mean, everybody knew the ending of that. And, you know, you sort of approach it. First of all, I approach it like I'm cutting a film that no one knows the ending to. You know
Okay.
what I mean? I can't. I have to assume that people are going to be along for the ride with us. So I'm editing it as if it's a surprise ending and no one knows it. And then I think one of the other keys is to never. Like the crisp pace has a lot to do with that, and not just make it move fast, but you know, having the audience feel like they're being guided in sure hands, but being pulled along in a way that you don't have sort of the time to meander for your mind to meander. So you're always being, you know, pulled along in the story, and to the point where you hopefully you get the audience so involved that they stop thinking about what the end is going to be. They're just in that moment, you know. And I think that's what we try and go for, and that's what we try and we went for in Argo. You know, you have to just pretend that you don't know the ending either. You know, and edit it with that in mind.
Something very key here that helps keep everybody in the moment is your perfect blend of archival footage, especially in the opening montage. I mean, that sets the pace. You kick us off with a bang. Did you source this archival footage yourself? Did you have a research department? How did you go about incorporating so much of that within the film, and particularly with the montages?
Well, fortunately for me, Ben, you know, had this idea for this montage, and what he did was he had 8mm cameras and 16mm cameras and video cameras, and he would run around between takes and shoot stuff or hand cameras to the extras or people on the crew, and everybody was shooting stuff at some point. So I have hours and hours and hours of all this sort of archival stuff that, or it's not really archival, but it looks like archival because of the way it's been shot with this grainy stock. And then some of the things were mentioned in the script, a couple of the archival pieces, but then it was just like, we had an archivalist, a researcher who would bring me stuff, but a lot of it, I just would go on, you know, I found stuff on YouTube, I found stuff on the internet in different places and stock libraries, and, you know, just, and the idea that was in my mind, it was like all pop culture, you know, it was all, you know, movies and commercials and sneakers and things, that, you know, and cell phones and whatever. There was some breakdancing and Jane Fonda. So it's all sort of pop culture kind of stuff so that it fit the tone of the film, you know. And there's a lot of heavy things that happened then, too. That's not what this film was. So, and it was fun, but it was a little daunting because it opens it up to so much material that you could get lost in it. And we went through, I don't know how many versions of that. We kept changing it and changing it because we'd find more archival stuff and or better, and then Ben would shoot more stuff on the set. So it was evolving all the way through till almost the end of the locked picture. But it brought back so many memories of so many things, so it was really, really fun. And at the very end of the thing, we put a little piece of a Dunkin' Donuts commercial for Ben.
You had to.
I know, it was my assistant's idea, and I was like, oh my God, that's perfect. And we put that in.
Yeah. Something really unique with this film that we don't see that often is no score. No score written for this film. This film it relies musically on needle drops, top 40 hits of the day, and bits and pieces of score. If, you know, if my ears weren't playing tricks on me, bits and pieces of score from films of that 80s genre. How does that impact you as an editor? Because you don't have a composer or a score per se to work with for rhythm. Some people I know, directors and editors, they like to have a score and edit to the score. So how did this affect you in the editing process here?
Well, you know, what happened was, I mean, Ben always wanted to have the needle drops. I mean, he came up with first there were several songs in the script, and then, you know, but as we got closer, he said to me, I want to have a lot of songs. And he gave me a huge playlist to work from. And, you know, we would go back and forth, you know, trying this song, that song, different places, play, you know, different starts and stops. But we were going to have a composer to do the actual underscore. And, you know, a couple people we asked weren't available. And, you know, meanwhile, they were shooting and I was temping, putting in temp music. And, you know, it seemed logical to use movie score from films of that era. And I started putting stuff in, and Ben really, really liked it. And then he came up with the idea. He said, "Well, why don't we just do the whole film that way? Why don't we just use all music from those era films and just buy it?" And I thought, "Wow, that's an awesome idea." And so I did it. Basically, I got as many scores from the '80s as I could find, and tried to keep it all of a piece, you know, so it felt like a unified score. And then I have a music editor named Corey Milano who worked with me on it, and we together basically made the score using existing music, and it was really fun to do. To it's like almost doing it in reverse in some weird way.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like I said, it was really fun and really rewarding because it was kind of an experiment that worked, and so that I found it really rewarding at the end of the day. And then the poor music supervisor to clear all those pieces of music was a Herculean job, and there were so many pieces of score where there were several that we couldn't find the rights, who owned the rights to them, because they were, you know, they're whatever, four, almost 40 years old, and you'd be surprised how many times the studio was like, yeah, we don't know who owns the rights to that. Yeah, or, yeah, try this company, we don't know. Like, it was a lot of, like, call them. Well, we just called them, and they told us to call you, and, you know, that kind of thing. Andrea, who is the music supervisor, just did an amazing job, and, you know, a couple of times we had to swap out music cues because we just couldn't find who owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people had died, retired, and so it was quite the investigation to get all the rights cleared.
Now, did you run into any problem because of the needle drops? Because the majority of these are such well-known hits. Were there any that you had thought you wanted and then couldn't get because of the cost? So you then had to change on the fly with the needle drops as well.
Yeah, there were some. You know, there were some concessions because of budget. But, you know, I was just talking about this yesterday to someone. Every time we had to make what we thought was a concession, we can't use that, let's try and find something else that's left. It always turned out better for the film, whether that was, you know, serendipity or, you know, just that having a little less well-known song fit the movie better but still thematically was correct. I don't know, but every time we had a change, it turned out, oh, that's even better than what we had, you know, so because maybe, like I said, maybe it wasn't quite as well-known or something like that, but we never, at the end of the day, we never felt like, oh, if we could have only had X, you know,
mm-hmm.
we never felt like we gave up anything. It felt like we ended up with the song score we were supposed to have.
Well, I've got one big question for you, Billy. This is now your fourth film with Ben, working with Ben. What is the magic in your collaboration with him that keeps you coming back?
Well, I love working with Ben. We had so much fun together. I feel like, you know, we didn't grow up together, but I feel like we grew up together. You know, he's a very kindred spirit, and he has a very similar sensibility and a very similar taste to mine. And I think now we've developed this shorthand, so, because we have complete trust in each other. We can say anything to each other, like, and not hurt anybody's feelings. And, you know, I wish I could put my finger on what makes our relationship special, because I think we've done some great work together. Yeah, I think it's just a similar take on things, you know, that we trust each other's taste. And sometimes, you know, he'll convince me of something I'm not quite sure about, or I'll convince him. And because we have so much faith in each other and trust in each other, that we know that it's all going to be in the right bandwidth for that particular film. And I think, you know, sometimes things are unexplained, you know, like why, you know, so many moving parts have to come together to make a great film, and so many little details have to be right to make a great relationship. And for whatever reason, we found each other, you know, and it's been one of the highlights of my life and certainly my career. I consider him a real friend, you know, I just love working with him. He's inspiring. You know, there's different ways to get people to do their job, and Ben takes the approach of inspiring people to do their best work, and, you know, as opposed to, like, berating people. What some, you know, some directors I've worked for can be very difficult. Ben creates an environment that allows everybody to do their best work, and it encourages everybody to do their best work, and you know, especially on this film, everybody was so passionate about it that, you know, you just wanted everybody you know, it was like a real collegial experience, this film. Everybody, we were all working the same building, production office, the set, the editing room was all in the same place. So we were all together all the time, and it really was inspiring.
It shows on the screen, Billy. I got to tell you, the Air is award-worthy on every single level. Just amazing job. Amazing.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled with the film, and I'm thrilled that you loved it.
I've only watched it 5 times since March.
I've seen it a few more than that.
I bet you have. Billy, thank you so, so much, and I hope we get to chat again in the future.
You too. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.